Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus. As we pull out this glorious vehicle, my good friend Doug Tonis is on the line. And Doug, we're missing a door right now. There's a bunch of egg all over the bus. There's throw up in the back. We're in a dilapidated position compared to where we once were. What do you think of the ride right now that we're going on?
I think we're going to rename the show the Big Red Bus. It just
the bus
doesn't seem like much is going to happen this year. Obviously, at this point, the Chris Dunn injury really changed any chance they had of doing anything special. They lost those five games in a row now, and so clearly they have moved entirely back in a tanking direction. And the tough thing about that is, of course, by winning all those games and giving us hope, and which was great and fun to see. We now are not in nearly as strong a draft position as if we had just stayed in the tanking lane the whole time.
That is true, but we're in a decent position. There's still hope, right? I mean, I think we're the sixth right now, the sixth worst record. We got 18 wins. There's a bunch of teams with 15. It's entirely possible if the team keeps on playing at this poor level that we could still get in the top five, and that's kind of where you want to be in this draft.
Sure. Well, you want to be as high as you can. I mean, actually, the drop-off between one and not one is huge. So being number one is obviously a huge chance. But if in the lotto you end up as, say, number fifth, you have a pretty decent chance of moving up still. You know, it's like, yeah, I don't know the exact odds in front of me, but it's probably like a one in three chance of moving up if you're in fifth, or one in four or something like that. So it's not like your odds are crazy of moving up once you get to those spots. Now, it doesn't mean you move up to number one, of course, but like moving up to one of the top three. So the Bulls do look like they're in that type of position. It's, I believe, Atlanta and Orlando with 15 wins, and Memphis and Sacramento with 16 wins, maybe, or maybe Memphis has 18, and there's the Suns, I don't know. Two teams with 16, two with 15. There's three teams with 18 right now, so the Bulls are one of those three. I think we're going to be in that grouping right there of those seven teams. The teams like immediately on the cusp after us are Brooklyn and the Lakers. Neither of those teams have their own pick next year, so neither of them are going to be incentivized to start losing games at the end. They all have to win as many as they can because they want that pick to be as high as it can for the other team to not get as big an advantage. Like, they don't want those trades to look even worse for them by giving a team a number three or four pick. So those teams will be really trying to win. And so I think that seven is really going to be the bottom seven, and now it just depends where we fall in that group of seven teams.
Amen. You know, so obviously the big news of the week is the end of Nico Mirotic's glorious tenure with the Chicago Bulls. He was traded for Omer and a number one pick to the New Orleans Pelicans. Wasn't a big surprise. I mean, there was rumors all week that this was going to happen. What's your take on the trade? And have you got to sleep this week with his departure? Or do you feel like this is a good move for the beloved?
It's clearly a good move, right? So at first I was a little disappointed because I thought we were taking on a lot more salary than we were. I then found out a Sheik's deal is not guaranteed in the final year. It's only guaranteed for $3 million. So the amount of money we're taking on is much less than I initially thought it was, which makes the deal a lot more palatable in my opinion. But even if you were taking on that total amount of money, it's still a good deal because there were no other picks being traded. And I think we have to look at how much more valuable picks are right now in the NBA than they were just a short time ago. You see that even with the types of protections being on picks, you see a lot less people being willing to give up these unprotected firsts. And now, even a lot of times, you'll have like long protection, and after 4 years, instead of being an unprotected first, you get 2 second rounders or something. So a lot of those types of trades are going to be harder and harder to get. Teams are valuing picks more. It makes sense because the first round draft pick now, compared to how much salary you're paying them, is a much higher value than it used to be. So the scale of the rookie salaries has not gone up in line with the salary cap. So now these rookies are actually much better value players than they were in the past. And contracts are shorter now. So teams aren't looking to use picks to get out of these super long-term deals, because by the time you really decide you want to move on from someone, it's been 2 years. And usually at that point, the most you have is 2 years left. So I think it's harder to get draft picks than it once was. And teams are valuing them a little bit more.
Yeah, unfortunately, the Pelicans are, fortunately for us, unfortunately for the fans in New Orleans, the Pelicans made this trade, I think, with the understanding that, or likelihood, that Greg Monroe was also going to sign because he is from New Orleans. He signs with the Celtics. Obviously, you know, they still have Anthony Davis, who's one of the best players in the NBA, and he scored over 40 yesterday to help them, you know, win. But with the loss of Monroe, I think it's entirely possible that New Orleans could slip into the lottery. Am I
no
crazy
way.
To think that?
No. No, you're nuts. Have you looked at who has to win for them to slip into the lottery?
Well, the
So
Clippers do.
the teams right behind them,
Utah.
right now the ninth place team is the Clippers at 25-25. I
Right.
don't know how much you want to talk about Blake Griffin, but it's pretty clear the Clippers are not going to be gaining games on anyone. The team behind the Clippers is Utah, who's 23-28, 5 games beneath New Orleans. And there's really no reason to think that the Jazz are going to get considerably better. And after that, I think it's the Lakers. I mean, who are like now like 8 games under. There's like no reason to expect them to be good either. So I think the Pelicans, the worst that's going to happen is they're going to slip into eighth. I just can't see them going further than that.
Well, let me just throw this out there. So it all depends on what the Clippers do from here on out, because they do have Tobias Harris, who's a fantastic player. They have Lou Williams, who's been great. And obviously, if they trade DeAndre Jordan, well, then the dream is over. But at the team as is, I think is still good enough to potentially stay in the playoff race and eventually beat out a Pelicans team that just lost Boogie Cousins. I mean, any way you look at it, the Pelicans are considerably worse. I understand the Clippers lost Blake Griffin. They lost Boogie Cousins. Yeah, they added
I don't
Nico
think the
Mirotic.
Pelicans are worse.
You don't think they're worse by losing Boogie Cousins and adding
No,
Mirotic?
I one, you know I hate him, and as do you. So
Wow,
don't pretend
exactly.
like you're not at least partially thinking what I am, because I know you are.
I'm in the same boat. Agreed.
They added Mirotic and subtracted Cousins. I think Mirotic is a better defender than Cousins, and I think he's a better fit next to Davis. And I don't think there is any two-man game between Davis and Cousins, and they were in a take turns type of environment, which never really ends up working well. I think you actually are going to see a much better fit with Mirotic firing away threes next to Anthony Davis than you were with Cousins.
Well, I hope you're wrong. I keep on saying that. I hope the 2016 Nico Mirotic, shows up. If you look at the big picture, Doug, Nico showed up to a team that, had gone 3-20 over a certain stretch of games. There couldn't have been less pressure on him at all. You're just coming in a situation, have fun, play. Nobody expects anything out of this team. They stink. In his history with this team, he's performed terrible in the playoffs. He's performed terrible down the stretch when it matters most. I think, and you saw his numbers slightly declining, starting that decline. I think it's entirely impossible that he could just, put up a big stinker in New Orleans, and that team could either fall to eight or out of playoffs. You're probably right. I'm probably wrong. It's going to take a incredible series of events. Number one, that the Clippers don't trade anyone else. But I think the Clippers still are a formidable team.
I think it would require an Anthony Davis injury, like in the next 3 weeks, like a
True.
season-ending injury for them to fall out of the playoffs. I mean, I really think that's it. They have a pretty big lead. The teams behind them, I don't think Utah is like going all in trying to get there. I don't think the Clippers. I think with this move, they signaled pretty strongly that they want to rebuild. I think they're going to try to get into the lottery and deeper in the lottery if they can. I don't think they're going to try and win. I just said, I think this is it. The playoffs in the West are pretty locked with the 8 teams there.
So where does this pick most likely fall in your opinion then? Between like 15 and 20?
Yeah, 15-20 is the range, right? I mean, they can drop down to 15 if they're the worst playoff team. If you look in the East, like all the East teams are like pretty much identical records to the
Yes.
Pelicans, like within like one game. Like everyone has got like 28-29 wins. So that is really going to determine is how the Pelicans fare against the Eastern playoff teams more so than whether they can stay in the race in the West.
Interesting. So, yeah, so either way you look at it, I agree with you 100%. Getting a 15 to 20 range pick where, it's not a slam dunk. You hope to get a rotation player, but occasionally you can find a good player there. I think this was a home run trade. As I said before, when I look back on Nico's career, and I'd like to get your opinion on that as I look back, what sits with me is 17 total playoff games. 326 total minutes. He shot 31% from the field, 26% from three, 1.8 free throw attempts per game, which is allegedly his biggest strength, and 1.1 assists per game. He just never stepped up when we needed him most. That's a significant number of games, a significant number of minutes. And I understand he was 23 and 25 when he played in those games, but I have zero faith in Nico that he's going to perform when it matters most. And, I'm glad he played a lot better this year. It's kind of amazing in retrospect that a guy that nobody wanted to sign this last summer suddenly garners a first round draft pick. That's great for us, and good for him that he's improved that much, and hats off to him for getting better. But I'm not going to lose any sleep that Nico is no longer part of the Bulls. What say you? A little retrospective from you on his career.
So I don't, I'm not as harsh on him as you are. I mean, his first 3 years in the league, I mean, he's still adjusting to the NBA from Europe. And I don't look at the age. I mean, I look at really years in the league at three. You know, the age is certainly a factor too, but years in the league is also a factor. Different 3-point line, stuff like that, which is really around his strengths. I think you can understand why that would be a bit of an adjustment. And he was fine, but he was not a great player. Like, there's no way to say he was a great player for the Bulls. It looked like he was maybe starting to break out this year. We'll see if that was just one of those random bumps we've seen from him where he's good for about 2 months at a time, or whether he keeps that up for the rest of his career. The NBA clearly doesn't think he's going to keep it up for the rest of his career based on the type of trade offers we got. And I do think it was a good trade in terms of getting rid of him and getting this draft pick. But you got to think, if we didn't have Mirotić on this team, what would our record be right now? Like, he was the leading scorer, right? I mean, you have to say, if we didn't have him, we lost at least five more games, don't you?
I'd agree.
Don't you have to think that? And so we really, with this trade, the net deal of the whole thing was that we dropped from pretty much a guaranteed top four pick, because we would have been the worst team in the NBA, to probably picking, we'll say, sixth. Now, it'll depend how the lottery balls fall. You don't know. We still might end up in a better position. But you may have dropped five places at the top of the draft to get that 15 to 20 pick. Now, I guarantee you we're not going to be able to trade our pick in the 15 to 20 to move up to number one, or number two.
Yeah.
So in the end, I don't know that it was a good decision to sign him. At the same time, I don't think you could have looked at Nico's career and said, well, if we sign this guy, he's definitely going to get us like six more wins. Like, in the offseason, there's no way I would have thought that. So it turned out that way, as it just so happens. But I completely get why no one would think, oh, I'm scared if I sign him, I'm going to win too many games. He's going to help the team out too much. I would have never thought that. And so just the way it turned out, though, we would have been better off having just not signed him at all, in my opinion, not having this extra pick, but having a much worse record. Now, at the same time, as far as things go, I think it's, it's pretty good. Maybe the Bulls will end up winning the lottery or getting a second or third pick, and it'll turn out better than if they were in a different position. I mean, they're close enough where that is definitely a legitimate possibility. So we'll just have to see how the ping pong balls bounce, when they do the lotto drawing.
Yeah, it's not out of the realm of possibility. It's not entirely impossible that the Bulls could still end up with the number one overall pick. You know, the odds
are. No, it's very possible.
I'm sorry. Would you?
Very possible.
Yeah, so it's entirely possible. So let's say that does happen, and the Bulls manage to turn Nico Mirotić into a pick. And let's say it's also not out of the realm of possibility that the Pelicans fall into the lottery. That not as good of odds as you said before, and you made a great case. But Anthony Davis has been known to get injured. It can happen. And if that pick somehow ends up in 11 to 15, and they could come out of this draft with Ayton, who's exactly would be a perfect fit at center, and one of the Bridges brothers, they're not brothers, but Mikal or Miles Bridges, to slide into that three spot. And to think that you could go into next season with Dunn at the one, at the point guard, LaVine at the two, one of the Bridges at the three, Markkanen at the four, and Ayton at the five. That team, those five guys, to me, would represent the best team ever assembled of players under 24 in the NBA in the last 20 years, starters. And just to think of the possibility of that team being able to put that team together and watching them grow over the next 3 years, I mean, it's exciting that we're almost in that position. Now, a lot has to happen between now and then, and who knows where the ping pong balls are going to fall. But it is exciting to me that they were able to get a number one pick out of Nico. And I am excited to see what they do, here going forward. One quick comment I do want to make. Nico's return absolutely led to more wins. But what also was not discussed and kind of ignored was Nwaba was out for a large percentage of those losses, that huge losing streak we had. He came back, we immediately were competitive again, and Dunn started playing significantly better. Well, Dunn's been gone, and you've seen our drop-off happen there. I'd like to get your opinion on Dunn's absence and how it's affected this team in such a negative fashion. Do you feel that's been a big part of this drop-off recently?
I don't think anyone could deny that. I mean, the team looks so awful without Dunn out there. It's funny because I didn't really think Dunn was so great at, like, all of these point guard things, and he doesn't shoot well, but, like, oh, man, watching the ball, like, try to move without Dunn out there, it's just painful.
Yes.
I mean, it really is painful how bad the Bulls' point guard play is with Jaren Grant. And no offense to Grant. I think Grant is fine. He's making, like, $2 million or something. Grant is a fine guy who's, like, being paid third point guard money. And in short stretches, I think Grant is fine. He makes generally good decisions. He's pretty conservative with the ball. You know, most of the types of mistakes are, like, you know, he over-dribbles, maybe not aggressive enough with his passes. But they're fine for a third guard. And maybe even a guy who's a 2A, 2B, second point slash third point guard. But as a number one point guard, he's definitely not there. And, you know, we didn't expect him to be there. But it's pretty ugly right now. I mean, it's really ugly for the Bulls without Chris Dunn in there. And as long as Dunn is out with this concussion, it's like almost hard to see them getting a win. I mean, you figure maybe they get one game where everyone shoots really well, but it's hard to see this team winning without Chris Dunn.
No doubt. And not only that, I noticed it most defensively. Like, CJ McCall, if that happened and Dunn was on the team, you could have put him on there for long stretches. That would have never happened. 50 points would not have happened. You could have put Dunn on him. Yeah, he still would have had 30. He still would have had 35, not 50. And they just had absolutely no answer for him. And Holiday was just pathetic trying to guard him. And they had some short stretches where Grant was on him. It was an embarrassment. You know, that's to me where they're really hurting is on the perimeter defense when he's out, because he is so much. He's so clearly their best perimeter defender. It's not even close. You know, he's good for two or three steals a game. His absence just makes me fall in love with him even more. It's been a while since I'd love to get your take on LaVine, because we haven't really, I don't think we've talked since, it's been already 2 weeks, and he's had a number of bad games in the interim, and we haven't really had your comments. I've seen him on Twitter, and I'd like for you to share with the audience what you think, your disappointment in him overall, and, you know, what do you think going forward is going to happen if he continues at this level of play?
Yeah, LaVine is now going through the stretch that I thought was going to happen. We talked about it before he came back, where I said he's going to be worse than he was. He's going to shoot at a really low percentage. He's going to jack up shots as if he's a great shot maker. I mean, I think I made some quotes similar to that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is now the first two games he scored really efficiently. And I was like, oh, man, he's just not missing a beat. But then he went on five games in a row of pretty much abysmal play. And now he played well against Portland. So, I mean, I'll say he didn't play well until it was 23-2. You know, he missed all his early shots, and then when there's no pressure, kind of like your Captain Mirotić, he started scoring. But, you know, that's fine. It was nice to see Zach score. I do think it does make it really interesting to see what the Bulls are going to do with his contract in the offseason. I ran some numbers. I discussed this on the Bulls beat as well today, but I'll throw it on here too. The Bulls' qualifying offer on LaVine is $4.4 million. The most of other team can pay him, I think, is going to average around $27 million a year for his max deal. You throw that all together and divide by five, and it comes down to the Bulls being able to pay $22.4 million for LaVine, and that will match the maximum he could make if he takes the qualifying offer and then gets a max contract with some other team. So the Bulls have no reason to go above that number. Mm-hmm. And because that basically represents zero risk for LaVine, right? Like, he can't improve on that. It can only get worse. The Bulls should go less than that number, right? Because they're giving him this huge guarantee. He's coming off an ACL. He's playing terribly. There's a good chance if he doesn't step it up more that other teams aren't going to be so interested in him. I mean, he really only scored at the super efficient, like, high rate for, like, you know, a partial season in Minnesota. It wasn't like he was dominant his first 2 years. It was just that third year where he was starting to break out. So, if I look at this, I think there's a good chance the market for LaVine might not be so tremendous if he continues to play badly. And if he takes the qualifying offer and has a bad year, which is certainly possible, the Bulls won't be incentivized to play him at all on the qualifying offer. No one stays with their team after the qualifying offer. Then he might go into that free agency and end up as like a four-year, $40 million player, or even worse if he has a really bad year. And so from LaVine's perspective, you know, if he can get like 80, 90 million guaranteed without having to take that risk, and knowing that his total upside is like 112 million or so if he takes the risk, I think the Bulls have a lot of leverage in this contract negotiation. It'll be interesting to see if they use it. But I think they should. I think LaVine is a really big risk. I think you've gotten enough in terms of Dunn and marketing that you don't need LaVine to justify this trade anymore. And if you don't want to sign him to a huge deal if he is not performing. Terrible defensively. Offense has not come around yet. He definitely shows a lot of potential, but it's a lot to pay for just potential.
I agree 100%. And I'd like to ask, I mean, what team is going to sign him to a max deal the way he's played? If he continues to play like this, it's not going to happen. First of all, there's only a handful of teams with cap space to do it anyhow. And none of those teams are going to sign him. You know, I'm, who knows? Maybe there's one. But I feel the way he is, you know, the way he's playing right now. And that's another thing, too. I think the days of Noah getting 18, 20 million, all those insane contracts that happened that 1 year are over. Those were incredibly dumb moves. GMs have learned from that. You're going to see salaries go back down to, I think, a more reasonable level. I think LaVine, and I'd like to get your opinion on this, where do you see the Bulls signing him, or what would be a fair offer for him? I'd say 16, 18 million a year for, let's say, 4 years.
See, I think you sign him to the 5-year deal for 80 million. 5 years, 80 million. 5 years, 16 million a year. I think that's my like max offer right now if I'm the Bulls. Now, if LaVine plays really great from here to the end of the season, and you're no longer really gambling on him, you know, becoming much better,
yeah,
it's a little different scenario. So it's really hard to judge because a lot of it just depends on what happens between now and end of the year. LaVine has a lot to prove. And it makes sense that he hasn't proven it yet. There's a lot of reason why we can say we still feel confident that he'll become a good player despite not playing so well yet. But if we are at the same point and he's shooting under 50% true shooting percentage at the end of the season, then I think absolutely I am not bidding high on LaVine. Yeah. You've got to show me more than that by the end of the year for me to bid really high. Otherwise, it's just a huge gamble. Now, the Bulls are maybe in a position to take a big gamble just because, you know, there's not any good free agents. By taking a Sheik back for Mirotić, they're not going to have so much cap room this year anyway, and there's no one to sign. I think that's one of the weird things about Nico not wanting to go to New Orleans if they didn't take his second year. I mean, he had no choice once they took his second year, so maybe he still doesn't want to go there. But I thought it was really weird that he would veto the trade, because if they didn't pick up his option, Nico might have been like the best free agent that's actually available to sign next year.
Right.
He might have been. I mean, so I thought that was kind of an oddball thing. But the Bulls aren't going to have a lot to do with their cap room anyway, and so I'd be willing to take a chance on LaVine. But I'm saying like 580, 16 million a year. I think that's, you know, about what I would try and get him at and see where things go.
Yeah, it is. I also do understand him not signing, Nico demanding that second year guarantee, just that I think his agent and Nico were extremely surprised that there was zero interest in him this past. He played much better at the end of last season, and I think he was expecting 18, and his agent was expecting 20. And when those offers didn't materialize, and they looked around and saw, all right, who has cap space? I think they said, you know what, we really want that second year guaranteed. And I didn't think it was that strange. I could kind of understand. It's still $12 million. It's still, you know, it's still a lot, and I agree. You know,
no way he's getting less than $12.5 million if he's a free agent this year.
But he could have got hurt.
No way.
He could have got hurt. You know, an ACL, yeah, absolutely would have been less than that. Or if his play really, if he went back to his 30% shooting days, I think it would have been questionable that he would have got more total, right? I'm sure he would have been able to at least get a 3-year deal for, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of between $30 million. But I kind of also do understand him asking. I know I'm alone on an island in that one, saying that it was kind of strange that he wanted that second year guaranteed.
Well, we should be clear. We don't know that he wanted the second year guarantee. We know that he did not want to go to New Orleans on a 1 year without the option being picked up. He may also not want to go there with the second year picked up either. He may have just said, I don't want to go to New Orleans.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't know. It's just once the option was picked up, he no longer had control. The trade clause is gone. So he vetoed without the option, but he had no choice to veto with the option. So we don't really know exactly what his thoughts were on that.
Yeah, I didn't even think of that option, and it's entirely possible. I mean, would you want to go play with Boogie Cousins? Is that a guy you want to be a teammate to? You know,
well, it still turns out he doesn't have to be.
Yeah. Well, next year he will, because who's going to sign Boogie Cousins to a max deal? You know, I think the only team that has a choice, the only place he can go is New Orleans. I don't see Boogie Cousins going anywhere but New Orleans.
Yeah, it's tough to see. And if I'm the Pelicans, I'm not signing into a max deal either.
Yeah, but
like,
they're dumb enough.
Especially not a super max. I'd be like, look, if you want to go sign with the Lakers or the Hawks or like one of these teams that's really terrible, you know, be my guest. You know, we're not giving you the fifth year coming off the Achilles. Honestly, I would, whatever. You know, we discussed neither of us like Cousins so much. I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens with him in the offseason, how much faith people have in him recovering from the Achilles, and what type of offer he gets.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about the Blake trade because it is relevant for Detroit in our division. I thought it was in, I don't know what Stan Van Gundy's doing. I understand Blake Griffin's a great player. He's one of the best players in the NBA. He's probably somewhere between 11 and 20. He's going to be making like $38 million at the age of 31. Does anyone really believe a guy who's so reliant on athleticism, that's going to be a good deal? You know, especially with the other contracts, horrible contracts, with Jackson on that team. And it's insanity to me. What did you think of that deal? How surprised were you, and who got the better?
Clearly, to me, the Clippers got the better end of this deal. They realized Blake Griffin was a bad signing. They realized they were on the train to mediocrity with no hope of getting off of it, and they cut bait early. And the thing I think that's interesting about Griffin is I looked at his stats, and I was trying to see, like, wow, that's crazy. Blake Griffin's a superstar. So I looked up at his stats, and I realized I've been fooled. Blake Griffin had an amazing rookie year for a rookie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Go look at his stats. He basically never improved from his rookie year. He was like 21 and 10 or something his rookie year. And like his best year ever is like 23 and 10 or whatever it was. It was something like that. If you go look, it's like his scoring never went up. His efficiency never really moved a whole lot. You know, like just very minor incremental adjustments. His rebounding went down, but it's probably because DeAndre Jordan came and stole a lot of the rebounds. I don't think it's because he fundamentally got worse. But it just, he never really got better. Like, everyone expected he was going to become a better player. And you could even almost argue that his stats improved just because Chris Paul came. Like, if Chris Paul can't get you an extra 2 points a game, you know, I mean, it's just like he never got better. It was a guy that was, like, super hyped, but just never really improved a whole lot from where he started out from.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm glad you agree with me on this. Tobias Harris, are you a fan of his game?
He's a decent player. He's a good player. I don't think he's clearly not as good as Blake Griffin is. You know, despite what I said about Griffin not getting better, he didn't get better from like entering the league at like a guy who's probably a top 20 player.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Tobias Harris is good. You know, he's a decent player. I mean, you got to figure at this point the Clippers' entire roster is going to get like turned around before they're good again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, whoever they got doesn't matter. You know, guys like Harris, you're probably going to see if you can flip them in trades or do whatever. I mean, maybe you sign him, maybe you don't. Doesn't have that many years left in the deal, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
I can't remember. I thought it was like 1 or 2 years left. So he's probably maybe not even a long-term fit for the organization. So
yeah.
You know, whatever you got back there, really what you did is you got out of Blake Griffin's like massive contract. That's what you did, and you got a mid-first-round pick.
And I was in L.A. this week, and believe it or not, all the Clippers fans are talking about not LeBron. They don't feel that there's a realistic chance of getting him, but they absolutely feel there's a realistic chance of getting Jimmy Butler in 2019. So especially if DeAndre Jordan stays with the team, they're extremely close. I don't know why they would do that. I think in the long run, Jimmy Butler and DeAndre Jordan just get you, you know, third at best probably in the West. But that's the talk. That's the talk. So,
if you can get third, I think you got to take it, right? I mean,
sure.
If you're just sitting around waiting for a guy who's going to make you the best team in the league, you'll probably wait forever.
Yeah.
You know, you do have to just at some point, it's even like the Bulls now. Do I think Lowry and Dunn and whoever they draft this year are likely going to bring them a title? No, I don't. I don't think it's very likely. Mm-hmm. But at some point, you assemble a bunch of young talent. You know, the talent is good. They're growing. They become, you know, however good they become. And you just have to roll the dice on hoping they become good enough.
Yeah.
Even though you know it's probably not likely. Like, you can't just accumulate talent until you feel like, yep, this is it. This is what I got. We're definitely a number one team now. Because you'll probably wait forever. When the Mavericks drafted Dirk, did they think, like, yep, Dirk is the guy that's going to lead us to a title? Like, probably not. And even when they had Dirk for a long time, there was a big period of time where people were like, they should move on from this guy. He's never going to be good enough to get them a title. Well, guess what? Eventually they did. And the year they won the title, you would have thought at the beginning of that year, there's no way they're going to win the title. So at some point, you just have to accumulate whatever talent you have. You then have to play them out, let them get as good as they get. And maybe it's like the 2004 Bulls where you did that and they peaked at the second round and then that wasn't enough and you end up rebuilding again. But you have to take your chances and just go with the guys that you got and then see how close you come.
Yeah, I would say I don't think there's a team in the league with a better future than the Bulls. I mean, I know we differ on this a little bit. It's hard to say, but Lauri Markkanen, where he's playing right now at 20 years old and Dunn at 23 and LaVine at 22, yeah, I don't think there's three better young guys in the league, 23 and under, on the same team.
I think that's kind of irrelevant, though, right? Like, if you drafted the next LeBron, you would be fine with one guy under 23 who's future number one than three guys who are, like,
we have a major
top 30.
We have a major difference on Larry. We've gone over this 100 times on market and ceiling. I think it's much higher than anyone else does. But, I'm C. Red Fred, so, of course, everybody's going to accuse me of drinking the red Kool-Aid. I'd be remiss if we don't talk about this. We have to talk about this. The situation with LeBron, so one of a writer-friendly writer-friendly to LeBron comes out what I'm considering, I'd be open to Golden State, provided they could figure out a max slot. I mean, it's just hilarious to me. But I do firmly believe that LeBron has always had an issue with that Cavs owner, as to me, completely understandable with that, just asinine letter after that he sent out after LeBron left the first time. And now I think he's positioned it, and he's put himself in the perfect position to leave Cleveland at the end of this season, and everyone's going to blame the owner. So this news comes out this week, and I don't think there's a chance in hell he'll end up at Golden State, but I do feel he's going somewhere. Where do you think, outside of Cleveland, a most likely destination is for LeBron James next season?
I have no idea.
I got one.
You almost figure he has to try and work a sign and trade to get somewhere. There's no one with cap room that is even remotely enticing for LeBron.
Sure.
So, and I think this news, I just laughed at it because, one, this to me seemed like the ultimate clickbait article. Like, there's no way this is going to happen. Mm-hmm. Two, it was probably a clear shot from LeBron to the Cavs ownership of just being pissed off about whatever. And, there's like some rift between him and Isaiah Thomas already, the old new guard and all that junk. And so he just throws this out there in his typical LeBron passive aggressive, kind of like way of dealing with the media, which I think he's gotten really good at. I mean, I almost like LeBron now, which is like a near impossible thing to say. But LeBron clearly, when you say that letter, and I think this is the thing that's funny, people can blame the owner and he wrote that letter and all stuff. He came back after that. LeBron will do what's best for LeBron. He didn't come back to Cleveland because he needed to do some unfinished business or whatever else. He came back to Cleveland because they had positioned themselves as a team that could offer him max money and give them the best chance of winning a title. I don't see any team with max money who can do that this year. So I'm really excited to hear what your option for LeBron is, because I got nothing.
Well, I think that, one of his best friends is Chris Paul, and whatever you say about the group over in Houston, they are extremely creative at creating deals that will allow for something like this to happen. And I think that's the only team to me, the Houston Rockets, where he would go in and immediately that's a team that could win a title. Like, I think he's about winning another title. Everything I've read, he wants to win another title. Another team, I know you're going to laugh, but I'll say that if the Bulls somehow get the number one pick overall and they get Ayton, LeBron would be a perfect fit in Chicago.
Max Kepsis anymore, though.
Yeah, but we're pretty close, right? Wouldn't we be able
not
to?
Not after taking Ashik.
But no, we had Mirotić under for $12 million, right? What happens if we refuse to sign LaVine? You get pretty close to it, couldn't you?
Yeah, you might. I'd have to run the numbers, and I can't remember if we had Max with Mirotić or you had to remove Mirotić from Max. I should run the numbers before I say that. Maybe we would have room. I think, and you're right, in some ways, it would be like a logical decision for LeBron to be like, wow, look at these guys. They have all this young talent. But I don't think teams look at it that way, or players, sorry, look at teams that way. They look at what you're winning now and what you're ready to do right away. LeBron would look at the Bulls and be like, oh, yeah, that's a team that could maybe grow up over the next few years. But I don't think he would say, they're ready to win right away. I do agree with you on Houston. If they can somehow figure out a way to make the salaries work, I just don't see how they can do that.
Yeah, but that's what he did with Cleveland. Cleveland was a lottery team before he went there, right? And they had the number one overall pick, and they turned that into Kevin Love. I know, obviously, that's a unique situation. He left it, and he's going back home. But I
he had two all-stars on his team when he went back there, though, right? He knew they were getting Kevin Love. He knew they had Kyrie Irving. So he was going to a team with two all-stars. The Bulls aren't that scenario. He's looking at two guys who maybe have all-star potential later on in their careers, and like Markkanen and Ayton, if they somehow lucked into Ayton, which doesn't really seem likely. So it's very hard for me to see how that would work out.
Yeah, yeah. I guess you're right. I guess you're right. But I think it's a more likely, if he wants to win, if he's serious about winning, to me, going to the Bulls is a better choice than going to the Lakers, you know, which is the other destination everybody talks about, Lonzo and Ingram. Yeah, that's pretty good. You know, I don't think it's better than Dunn in marketing. Oh, and
LeBron. Yeah, it depends really what happens. I mean, the Bulls will also be adding two assets this year, you know, in terms of draft picks, you know, with a mid-round pick, and, you know, you probably can't count on that guy doing anything. Yeah. But if they add, like, a premier draft pick this year, you could definitely see where the Bulls' young core could be very exciting. Very exciting.
Let's just throw the hypothetical out there, and let's say he does somehow end up in Houston with Chris Paul and Harden next year. You think that team would be good enough to beat Golden State?
I think it would be good enough to be interesting, but no. Okay. They don't have the depth.
Yeah.
They just Golden State would still have more depth up and down the roster. I don't think I don't know how well that team would mesh either. Like, Harden, to me, is still a guy who doesn't necessarily play super well with other players who are demand lots of shots. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Chris Paul, probably the ultimate in terms of guys who can help other players. But then, at the other hand, LeBron is used to kind of playing almost like point guard. These are, like, three guys who really need the ball in their hands a lot.
Yeah.
It's hard to see how that would mesh as well. Though you could, you know, I mean, and you look at Golden State, it's a little different, right? So any of those guys, their big three, if you consider them to be Durant, Thompson, and Curry, any of those guys can do great with the ball in their hands. But all three of them are amazingly deadly off the ball. You know, you can't leave any of those guys for an instant where they're going to just drill threes all day long on you. LeBron definitely doesn't have that. I don't think Chris Paul and Harden are the same caliber of shooters as that three group of three people are. So I don't think they'd have the same off-the-ball mojo. Now, Harden and Paul are good shooters, so it's not terrible. And LeBron's become a much better shooter over time. But I just don't see, and they don't have like a Draymond Green in their back pocket. And even the depth of the Warriors players after that is still, you know, very solid. And
yeah.
Houston would be just picking up just straight minimum players.
Yeah, I think it's a fascinating situation because any way you look at it, number one, it's going to take an incredible effort to get out of the East. With the way Toronto and Boston have played. And I think they could still do it, but they're really not playing well right now, and their defense is horrific. And any way you look at it, they're still going to get slaughtered by Golden State in the finals. They're not beating Golden State. So what do you have when you come back? You got, you know, Isaiah Thomas and Kevin Love, who's hurt every 5 minutes, both on the downward slide of their careers. And then what else do you have in Cleveland? The team sucks. You got Korver, and just a bunch of, you know, mismatched garbage. And nobody's really young. Nobody's super, you know, difference makers on a defensive end. It's like, I don't see any reason why he would stay there other than just loyalty to the fan base or potentially, and this is one thing I like to throw out, is that maybe the owner gets a conscience and decides to sell the team to him and his group, which I think would be the best case scenario for LeBron. But, we'll see, man. It's a fascinating situation. I can't wait to see what happens. But it's pretty
good
stuff.
It would have been really interesting if Cleveland had traded with the Bulls, picked up Mirotić, Lopez, and Holiday for, say, Kevin Love, maybe Tristan Thompson, and, like, say, J.R. Smith or something. Like, basically, just dump a bunch of these kind of, like, big underperforming contracts on the Bulls to get those three guys. The Bulls would continue on their tanking ways. And then they'd throw in, like, the Brooklyn pick and maybe their own pick.
Oh,
and that would have been a team that would have maybe then had a chance
to
do something. You know, it probably still wouldn't have been enough, and it would have probably killed their future. I think Cleveland's already prepared to move on without LeBron. I think they're making moves now with the idea that LeBron's probably not going to be there in the future. Or they would have traded this Brooklyn pick to upgrade the team. And I guess they still might. You know, it's not over yet.
That's true. We still have some time. So as we approach the wrap things up on the big red bus as we get to the final block, apparently there's still trades to be had. Out of the guys left, who do you think is most likely to go?
You'd have to say probably Robin Lopez is the most likely. I think actually Jameer Nelson might be the second most likely. Just some team might give you like a second rounder just to flip him in a trade. You know, someone who doesn't have a great second rounder, like, you know, something in the 40s, might be like, yeah, I'll give that up to get Jameer Nelson. Justin Holliday is probably next after that. I think if they were smart, they'd trade Wahba. That would probably be my pick of guys I would try to trade if there's a market for him.
Yeah, no doubt. I think Nwaba, you could see, I mean, that would help the tank effort because he definitely makes the team better. He's clearly their best perimeter defender when Dunn's out. And he's fantastic, athletic. Can the Bulls do that? Are they still positioned where they could just take on salary and get an asset without
They
making?
are. They got a trade exception back in this deal, so they can still take on a lot of salary just for nothing. And if, with any luck, we'll see how it goes. With any luck, they'll take on a contract and pick up another like late first or something like that. That would really be an ideal thing. And I think if some team, you know, who's maybe near the tax or something like that, their season's not going how they think it is, and maybe they could trade, say, a $10 million guy and David Wahba for David Wahba, and then offer us a draft pick. I think that's like a really nice deal for a team to maybe avoid some luxury tax, get a guy who can help them, and give up, you know, maybe a pick that's in the mid-20s that doesn't have so much value.
Yeah. Wow. Well, that'd be just a stellar job if they're able to do that. I don't expect, you know, with the kind of devalued way centers are in this league, I'd be shocked if the Bulls get a number one pick for Lopez. I almost prefer that we keep him just because I love his influence and leadership on the team. I think he helps out marketing quite a bit. And I do feel we'll be a playoff team next year, so I'd love to see him around. I think Holiday's almost the guy that, you know, even though he's kind of played poorly as of late. Who would almost garner probably the most in a trade? He's a valuable asset that'd be a nice backup 3-2, you know, for any team.
Yeah, I just don't think anyone's interested in Holiday. Yeah, he's another guy. Maybe you could trade him for a second rounder. Like, I don't. They're certainly not getting a first for Holiday. I agree with you. You're not going to get a first for Lopez unless you're taking on some really bad salary as part of the deal. And I guess maybe the same with Holiday. If you trade to say Cleveland, then you offer Holiday and Wahba for like J.R. Smith or something, and then they throw a first round pick back at you. They might do something like that, right? Wahba upgrades them, and then Holiday upgrades them, and they, you know, shed salary, which are paying huge amounts of luxury tax. So, you know, it ends up being like this massive, massive savings for them. You know, that's the type of deal where I think the Bulls still have some potential. If they find one of these teams that's in the repeater tax and is going to be has some bad contracts that they can take off the books, and they can like literally save the team like a $30 million luxury tax payment by taking on like $9 million of salary, and then they save like, you know, like $40 million. And then maybe $9 million the year after that, or something like that. You know, some team is probably going to say, yeah, my first round pick isn't worth $50 million in cash. You know, there's a real cash value to that. So I think that's the type of trade, if it's made, it'll be something where it's financial more so than player based.
Right, well, let's hope it happens. And great info as usual, Doug, as we pull the big red bus into the driveway for another exciting episode. It was a great ride, my friend. I'm looking forward to touching base with you again next week. Let's go, Bulls. Big game later today against the Clippers. Hopefully, that will result in another loss towards a tanking effort. And this will be up episodes, as I'm sure most people will be up sometime tonight, and you'll hear it and already know the results of that game. But just a note for everyone, Mirotić is his opener. With the Pelicans on tonight against Tibbs in Minnesota. Wow, is it going to be fun?
Yeah, I'm probably not going to tune in, but I'll definitely check out the box score later. Final thought, who you got in the Super Bowl?
I got the Patriots winning. I hope they win. I love excellence. Michael Jordan, the greatest of all time, and Tom Brady, the greatest quarterback of all time. Hope they win 37-21.
Going for the Eagles just because my brother lives in Pennsylvania, huge Eagles fan. You know, rooting for the aggregate family joy.
All right, my man. It sounds good, brother. It sounds good. And it's going to be enjoyable no matter what. Hey, all the best to you. I can't wait for the next ride on the Big Red Bus.
Catch you next week.